There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Live sport, the latest headlines, and top debate.
This is The Grill.
Live from Kickers Sports Bar with Tom Urquhart
on DubaiEye1038.
Two-time champion Petra Kvitová is into the fourth round at Wimbledon with a very straightforward 6-3, 6-2 victory over Magda Linette a little earlier on today. Wimbledon ongoing. It is a Super Sports Star Saturday or something of that ilk down at Wimbledon today. All sorts, Jess Ennis, Mo Farah, the entire England cricket team. They should be in the nets, but they're all down there having strawberries and cream. And there's some great tennis to look forward to. In fact, Andy Murray is on court at the moment. We'll talk more tennis in a few moments' time. However, let's get round some of the other sports stories of the day. Tour de France underway, watching it down here live from Kickers. We're in Sports City. Matt Fortune's very excited.
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's probably pushing it slightly. The thing I'm most excited for is going back to Europe in the summer because it looks absolutely beautiful on television. I've never spent any time in Belgium, but this is what the beautiful thing about the Tour de France is. Those helicopter shots, those long lingering views over beautiful countryside, incredible castles, and just seeing the riders worming through those tight streets is absolutely brilliant. Down on the road, it's not quite as exciting. It's a very mundane course so far, to be honest with you, Tom. We've got about 80 kilometres to go, so the best part of a couple of hours. The riders have been out there for about 2 hours, 40 minutes. Three riders in a breakaway group have been since the start. The peloton cruising along about a minute and 23 seconds behind. We expect them all to bunch up with about 10, 15 kilometres to go, and there'll be a sprint finish to start the tour off.
Final two round-robin games in the ICC Cricket World Cup underway. We've been bringing you updates from India against Sri Lanka. We'll continue to do that. But I just want to start with the other game which has been underway. Not for very long, but would the real South Africa please stand up?
Yes, South Africa have finally to show up in the last match of the pool play. It's taken them 9 matches to find some form, but they're off to a flyer against Australia. Today they won the toss, elected to bat first, which has been the trend in the last couple of weeks of this event. This match is Old Trafford, Manchester, and South Africa batting first are off to a flyer. They are currently 68 without loss after 8 overs, but the tone was set from the first ball of the day. It was Mitchell Starc, the fast left arm pace bowler, slightly down the leg side, swinging away. It was 5 wides, so they're off to a flyer. They were 5 without loss after 1 delivery. A rapid start for South Africa. So it's Aidan Markram, 32 not out, and Quinton de Kock, 29 not out. So South Africa, 68 without loss. Australia need to win to keep the first place, which means they'll take on New Zealand in the semi-final. Should they lose, should India win, then it'll be a India-New Zealand semi-final, and England will take on Australia. How about that for a semi-final in the World Cup?
Fascinating stuff there. We're into the final over of the Sri Lankan innings. I think Sri Lanka would take this.
Yeah, what a recovery. They were 55 for 4 before Angelo Matthews came to the crease. He's been just dismissed for 113 off 128 deliveries. 10 fours and 2 sixes for the former Sri Lankan captain. And Sri Lanka with 5 balls remaining, 259 for 6. So it's going to be a bit of a chase for India. They're going to have to get their A game on here to get that score. So currently 5 balls remaining. Sri Lanka batting first, 259 for 6. With 5 balls remaining, they're 50 overs.
Right, let's talk Wimbledon if we can. A certain Serena Williams is on court at the moment. She's taking on Julia Georges. Williams taking the first set by 6-3. Ash Barty also on in action. She's on a centre court at the moment. The current world number 1 from Australia has made short work of Harriet Dart in the first set. The Brit going down 6-1 to the Aussie on centre. Serena Williams is leading Julia Georges on court number 1, and Andy Murray's men's double match is underway on court number 2. Cracking day and cracking week of tennis at Wimbledon. No shortage of talkers that I'd like to address with the boys in just a few moments' time. Let's have a little reminder, a little mental jogger of exactly what went on at Wimbledon yesterday.
Hello, good morning, and a very warm welcome to the 5th day of action at the 2019 Wimbledon Tennis Championships. And it is another glorious day that we have in prospect. Has she done it? Zhang Shuai is absolutely ecstatic. Caroline Wozniacki, the former world number 1, has been eliminated.
I think she played better, and that's really
No!
Done it! Guido Pella is through to the second week of a Grand Slam for the very first time.
I just need to continue to do this job, this work with my team, to play every point like it was like the last. And now to be in the second week is an unbelievable feeling.
The third seed continuing on her Wimbledon travels.
Got it. Well, the defending champion wasn't at his best, but only Jimmy Connors and Roger Federer have ever reached the second week of Wimbledon more often than Novak Djokovic.
You know, credit to him for playing high-quality tennis, and I enjoyed it.
Simona Halep goes through comfortably in the end.
She's a very tough opponent and always is tough to face her. So I gave everything I had and I was very positive and confident.
And it is Ugo Umbea who will take his place in the last 16. And for the youngster, this raw talent, Oje Ali Asim, he goes no further.
The fairy tale continues, and she is into the second week in her first Wimbledon. Absolutely amazing.
Right now I'm just super relieved that it's over. It was a long match. She was playing unbelievable, and it was my first match on center court, so I guess people say court one's my court, but maybe center could be my court as well.
Number of stories for us to address in the world of tennis, and of course Wimbledon, which is into the middle Saturday. What about this 15-year-old, though? I mean, the dream start for Coco Gauff in the first of her games against Venus Williams, and then the astonishing comeback to reach the last 16 as well. She's 15 years old, fellas.
It's one of those classic things. I mean, I'm at that stage of my life where everybody who's doing well at anything seems to be younger than me. I'm at that bit.
I've been there for a long time now. Don't worry about that.
I'm at that, and it's just like, they were born when? And I just think, and you think now, so she's 15, born in 2004. I mean,
you get to that point. I've been at for a while now, where the longer you go, you know, the longer you have to scroll down when filling in a form online.
The bracket that you're in. Oh, I'm in the next one. No.
You know, when you're getting old, though, is when you see the children of players that that you used to play with are now coming through.
Yeah, it's terrifying. You know, George Weah's son has just moved for £10 million somewhere. I'm thinking, I remember George Weah even in those days. I mean, for her, it's fantastic. You're absolutely right, Tom. Nail on the head there. What better way to create some sort of momentum by beating somebody like Venus Williams? And actually, it's a Venus Williams whose career, of course, is dwindling. That's no disrespect to her. She's just getting a lot older when it comes to professional tennis. It's a bit like the example from one of my preferred sports, boxing. Anthony Joshua beating Vladimir Klitschko. It's not like Anthony Joshua beating peak Vladimir Klitschko, but it has such a reverberating impact for that person's career. And for her, beating Venus Williams as it did, she would have channeled all that excitement, all that happiness in the next round where she's up against it, when by absolute rights, a 15-year-old should not have that mental strength to be able to come back from where she was. It was brilliant to watch.
Interesting seeing what the 9-time champion Martina Navratilova said about her. She said, a star has been born. She has the feeling that Coco Gauff will transcend the game. She was born to do this.
You know,
and when we think about Navratilova as one of the all-time greats, she won her first Wimbledon title at 21. Here's a girl who's 15 playing in it.
Yeah, and you know, hopefully that happens. But I can't help but sort of temper conversation like this, where saying, well, around about this time last year, we were saying the same thing about a certain Naomi Osaka, who's had a horrendous time of it recently, more so emotionally and her approach to the game, the mind games that have been praised, the pressure that's been put under her as well by the media, by expectation, and to see her in the state that she's at the moment, not enjoying a game, not enjoying that place, you sort of want to cool off to a certain degree, yet you can't help but get excited about a 15-year-old.
No, you're absolutely right, Tom. It's like the Disney Club syndrome in Hollywood. All those young, talented actors that are thrust into the spotlight and then told that they're going to be the next big thing, the next winner of this award and everything else. You're absolutely right, and mentality is such an important part of sport. It doesn't matter if you've got all of the physical attributes, and I'm sure one of the people we'll talk about shortly is Nick Kyrgios, of course, who absolutely doesn't have the right mental state to push on and make the most of their talent. What you would hope with Coco Gauff is that there is a strong support network around her, that she hasn't just got a coach that's putting her through the paces, making sure her forehand's on point, that her serve's right, that she's fit enough, but actually sitting her down and making sure that she's taking stock of everything, not and learning to take it all in her stride. Because, I mean, thankfully, I wasn't young when social media was around. The thought of the 15-year-old me being known within my classroom was terrifying enough, yeah. Let alone walking down the street and people stopping me. Of course, you take it all in your stride at that moment, but it can have a real debilitating effect later down the line when, as Naomi Osaka is experiencing, a downturn in results. And this will happen. It's just important to not... I disagree that we shouldn't get carried away in this instance. I just think we have to temper the criticism when it inevitably has to come when her form downturns.
I suppose one thing we do need to do, though, is, as all responsible journalists and commentators of the game, is it Gauff? Is it Gauff? Have we had it confirmed either way? I'm going with Gauff at the moment, or Coco, just to be safe.
Just go with the precocious young talent, I think.
Precocious
that's
young
fine.
Talent, okay. We've got Chris McCarty joining us in about 10 minutes' time.
Talking of precocious young talents.
Once. we'll get him on.
Fine goalkeeper, wasn't he? Allegedly.
Well, I have been on the sidelines when he shipped 10 against a team of, I mean, admittedly very good players, but still.
You mentioned, talking of precocious young talent, in fact, you mentioned Nick Kyrgios there, another man who's been making headlines. Fascinating. I don't know who watched this one on Thursday. If you didn't get the opportunity to watch it, here's a little insight into what happened.
The finest tennis venue anywhere in the world. They're like two super middleweight boxers bouncing around inside the ring.
I thought he played really well today. And I knew his game plan. You know, he directed most of his serves to my forehand. And he hasn't really done that in the past. So he was definitely trying to stay away from my backhand return a lot. But I thought just on big points, I mean, he played well.
A tough opponent for the second round. Honestly, maybe the one that you want to face less.
A booming forehand, but there's one of those points back. A moment of magic by a man who is so hard to predict. You can almost hear the ball fizzing across the line.
Comfortable in all the service games. You know? Then I played a bad game and against a player like him. You lose the second. And playing Congress, I think I never had a break point again during the whole match.
I think his just ability to, you know, he plays every point. You know, he doesn't take one point off. And I feel like we're the polar opposites. I struggle so hard to just play every point with a routine and, you know, have the same patterns. And he just, I mean, his 1-2 punch, his first serve and his first forehand is probably the best.
That's brilliant from Nadal. And look at that. You would think he just won a third title. Huge emotion there.
I've been a tough third and fourth, but very happy the way that I hold the pressure and very happy the way that I played the tiebreaks with the right determination.
I enjoyed myself a lot out there. And I was just, at times today, I was looking around, like, you know, this is Wimbledon playing Rafa and having a lot of fun.
So it's an important victory for me, and that gives me the chance to keep going.
He's a champion. He played well in those moments, and that's why, you know, he's one of the greatest there is.
And it's centre court theatre. All that emotion now coming out. And in the middle of it, and at the end of it, some wonderful, wonderful tennis.
That was on Thursday night. I was prompted to, I'm very, very rarely prompted to tweet specifically on a Thursday night for good reason, but I had to this Thursday night because I was just transfixed. And I think it was along the lines of love him or loathe him, whatever people say about Nick Kyrgios, he is box office and therefore he's good for the game.
God, that's a big shout, Tom. I was actually wrestling with my opinion on this one. I couldn't work out if I was going to come on and say absolute disgrace, his attitude, the way he behaves in press conferences, shouldn't tennis be trying to kick him out of it? Or by the same token, thinking, I actually really just want to tune in and watch whatever he says before, what he does during, and then exactly what he says after. it depends your view on sport, I guess. Do you want? We look at it as sportsmen of very average level, I would suspect, all of us, and think, if I had all of that skill and all of that talent, wouldn't I want to be the very best I could possibly be? As it is, I was reading earlier today that Kyrgios has won £6 million in prize money. That's not a fair effort for a guy that doesn't look like he really cares that much. So should we be criticising someone who just wants to get on with life, who just wants to have a bit of fun, playing games like that, be box office a couple of times a year, and not have to put in all the toil? What you said there about Rafa. Rafa doesn't have a point off. That's a pretty tough place to be and not a lot of life to have around it. So part of me kind of admires an attitude of a guy that thinks, I've got all of this talent, I'm never going to be poor, I'm never going to be unhappy. Why stress myself out by going beyond it?
I just find him a fascinating character. Doesn't have a coach, doesn't have a coaching staff, looks after himself, obviously listens to his dad because his dad told him off halfway through that game. He seemed to pull his socks up. He's in the Dog and Fox. The Dog and Fox is a very well-known establishment in the heart of Wimbledon Village. He was in there the night before, taking selfies.
And also chatting up his doubles partner and inviting her down the night after.
I tuned in to watch the final couple of games of the set, of the fourth set, which Nadal actually eventually won and went to tiebreak. And I just found myself so frustrated watching Kyrgios because he's got so much talent and he makes the game look so easy when he's on, and then he makes a lot of really basic mistakes and he just shrugs his shoulders and moves to the next point. So I find him frustrating to watch. But I find myself tuning in because I want to say, I don't know what, you don't know quite what you're going to get from him. And when he was on, he had the game to beat Nadal. You know, I think he dominated the second set, and then there were two tie breaks after that he didn't win. But when he's on, when his game is on, when he's kind of in the zone, when he's concentrating, he's as good a game as anyone in world tennis. He's got that much ability, particularly on that surface. So I do find it frustrating to watch him. And then he looks as though he doesn't care, which again is maybe just the way his makeup is. Maybe that's what fuels him against the contradiction of Nadal, who's been playing since he was a very young age, like Kyrgios has. But you have to see every point is almost a matter of life and death for Rafa Nadal. So I found it frustrating, but
I think you make that valid point, or as we just heard there, this whole thing of Rafa, you know, is on every single point. Kyrgios, by his own admission, is not, because we saw a couple of times during that game, did we not, when he was 40-0 up on his serve, which is an extraordinary serve as well. It's got to be one of the best in the game out there. But when he's 40-0 point,
his underarm serve, the little underarm slice.
Well, the underarms we haven't even got onto yet, but it was when he was 40-0 up in a couple of the game points, and the return comes in from Rafa, and he tries a little drop volley between the legs or around the back one and things like that. And it's like, can you imagine any other player on tour going, you know what, I've got 3 points to play with here. I might as well have a laugh. He might go in. Might not, but it might.
And you're wondering why he hasn't got a coach. Can you imagine what his coach is thinking, trying to coach Nick Kyrgios on the sideline?
Yeah, I think it comes back to my point. I mean, do we, hand on heart, every single day we go into work, deliver 100%, don't let any passing minute go without us trying to achieve something? We don't. And for that reason, I kind of admire someone that just wants to make a living. He's not bothered about legacy in the same way that the true greats are. Is he truly great enough to really have an impact on the game that my children's children will talk about him? No, probably not. So therefore, why not just have some fun, like Tom says, try and play those cheeky shots, get to play on the most iconic sporting arenas in the world, and coin in about £6 million in the first few years of my career. There is a part of me that absolutely admires it. There's the other part of me that thinks, well, give us your talent, buddy, and I'll go and do it, because that would be something that I would really want to try and channel and be the best at. But it depends. I mean, I was reading today, sorry Tom to interrupt, but one of the things that I found interesting is his personality as well. He's incredibly difficult to characterize. This is a guy who people say is a spoiled little brat, but according to an Australian charity, invites kids who are unwell, cancer-suffering kids, to come and have a hit with him whenever he's in town and has some downtime. He's also very, very funny. We noticed the difference between the joke he cracked at the journalist who asked him if he wished he hadn't gone out the night before, and then the guy who's then chatting up his doubles partner in the press conference the following day. It's sort of admirable that you can't put him in a box.
Yeah, and I think the game of tennis, I know this is a cliche to say, but you know, we've all worked in sports broadcast and media for some time. I think the game needs it, because the game has a lot of metronome, very talented players. And there's a really good point made by Boris Becker. Was it Boris Becker or Tom Woodbridge during the commentary on that particular game, saying that the game of tennis probably does need him, given the fact that the big three are sort of eyeing the door at the moment. You know, they're picking and choosing their tournaments. Tennis will not have the big three to fall back on in a couple of years' time. So what does it have to fall back on, given the fact that all the other pretenders to the throne seem to be shooting themselves in the foot at the moment? And he could therefore play a role in terms of getting bums on seats. Tactically, I think that's the biggest issue for people to get around. The purists of the game, underarm serves, two in a game, on the centre court, the hallowed grounds, really, against Rafa, said he would. He's within the rules, he can do that. Probably get away with that one. The couple of drives he made at Rafa Nadal and admitted to trying to hit him at the net halfway through. I mean, it sort of backfired on him because we saw Rafa... game changed completely at that point because he did not like that.
The beast a little bit,
but
didn't he?
Seriously, I mean, to admit to that in a press conference afterwards, say, yeah, I'm trying to hit him.
Well, I mean, call me naive, but surely if there's no other way around him and he's a pretty imposing figure at the net and that's the only way you think you're going to win the point, then why not? I know it goes against the conduct within the game, I guess, but I did think it was quite fun. And you're right, admitting it afterwards, it's a bit like Luis Suarez or Diego Maradona. Ah, yeah, it was my handball, you know, hey ho.
The other thing about that is I think we see a lot in sport now, everyone's very buddy buddy, everyone's quite friendly, which is not the worst thing. I'm not going against that, but to see a genuine rivalry, genuine sort of dislike for the opponent.
Absolutely.
Just makes it more interesting. The rivalry it notches up a couple of levels. And ultimately what we like in sport is it's gladiatorial, right? We like to see two guys, you know, ask nothing given from the opponent, and there's a little bit of extra niggle to this match, which in some ways for the neutral fan, if you're not a massive tennis fan, you might tune in to watch that. You might tune in to see that. And, you know, nothing against the way Roger Federer goes about his business or Rafa Nadal goes about his business or Andy Murray goes about his business. It's just an extra level. And obviously, they have had history, these two, and there is a dislike there. And it's like going back to the old days, you know, Jimmy Connors and John McEnroe. There was a little bit extra in those matches.
Salty. And it's a bit salty.
It made the people tune in to see what was going on. So for me, it was just enough... I don't think they crossed the line, but it just pushed the envelope a little bit, which made it interesting.
I completely agree with Arch. I think having actual needle is sort of missing nowadays. You almost want, in any kind of press conference or something, you want someone to go out and you're like, God, you know what? That was the best win of my career because he is a whatever you want to insert. That really adds intrigue to it because everyone is so polished nowadays. Everyone is media trained in any sport to within an inch of their life. It's all about the perfect persona. They're all trying to build the brand away from the sport. But sport, as you say, Arch, at its heart is gladiatorial. It's about combat. It's about competition. And we don't have enough of it.
I'm really glad you said that because Chris McCarty tweeted... on Thursday, I think it was, said one of his questions, I think they were doing it on off script, was, you know, what's the most pointless thing in sport or something? They were running a poll. And I wanted to get in touch with him. I didn't. I wouldn't give him my time of day, basically. But I wanted to get in touch. So exactly that. The most pointless thing in sport is post-match interviews and press conferences because we all know what's going to be said. So what's the point in them? You know, so when you've got one like this where things are a little bit different, it gets the press involved, it gets observers involved. Yeah, I know the purists in tennis and the old guard are not going to like the way he goes about it, but is this just the evolution of tennis? And you know what? He's got a point as well. As much as I don't like the way he does a lot of it, and as much as I've got nothing against Rafa Nadal and think he's been absolutely genius for the game, he takes too long before points. 25 seconds is what you're given, allotted. Rafa Nadal constantly flirts with that 25 and goes over and things like that because of his pre-shot routines and because of the way he likes to play the game, the pace at which he likes to play the game. And if everyone is clamouring for a speeding up of the game, he's got a good point to make. And his point he was making, the thing that got him really angry and hot under the collar with the match, the chair umpire during that game was, look, okay, I'll wait for Rafa. It's Rafa. He's great. Okay, he's done so much for tennis. But when I'm ready to serve on my point, he's got to be ready. Because you play the game at the pace of the game. And if he wants to play a fast-paced tennis, if he wants to take advantage of that, he should be allowed to.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. They're too protected, and I think nobody will speak up about it. The press because of the nature of access to these big, big sports stars nowadays, you almost find that criticism of the likes of Rafael Nadal is so limited in the press. If there was someone actually making that noise for Kyrgios, he wouldn't have to do it. But the fact is that no one wants to be the one that upsets Rafa by putting it in the paper, because then they don't get their opportunity to interview them, or they don't get the question in the press conference. And that is incredibly frustrating. It's a bit of a chicken and egg situation. Like you say, the post-match press conference, if I scored a hat-trick on debut, I'm not going to say I'm happy for the 3 points. I'm going to tell you that it's a brilliant day for me and it was all about me, yada yada. But we just don't get it enough. Is that because the press beat it out of players, or because the players are so boring that the press ask the boring questions? I don't know. But I think the fact that we have someone out there willing to kind of push barriers, push the needle about what can be spoken about, I think is great.
Your thoughts on Nick Kyrgios, please do send them through to us on 4001. Boys, we're highlighting the fact that there are no shortage of familiar faces down at Wimbledon today. Middle Saturday is always a great day to be there. Arch couldn't be there this year. Ordinarily, he's round about this time of year down there. You've got all the England cricket boys down there. You've got a number of others as well. But one man who has been honoured down there today is a certain Rod Laver. Why? Well, it's an emotional moment on centre court, because it's 50 years to the day that he famously won the Callender Grand Slam. Rod Laver receiving a special award at Wimbledon. It is a place that he's made his own.
I tell you, Wimbledon is, to me, is the number one tournament in the world. I'm Rod Laver. 50 years ago, I won the Callender Grand Slam. And Wimbledon was one of my favourites. Like, I played well, and I think John was the same way. He felt good about the way he played.
He once again was on the trail of the Grand Slam. But by the fourth set, the rocket was firing on full power towards his third major of the year.
But, yeah, we had a few tight points, you know, at an important time, which, fortunately for me, I was the one that won. And you're hoping that, you know, your best tennis comes out when it's really needed. Memories are, yeah, you know, they can't take my memories away.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Game on indeed. Let's go to the cricket if we can. Mark Archer, so India, Sri Lanka in between innings, is that right?
Yeah, Sri Lanka have batted first and scored 264 for 7 in their 50 overs. India will need 265 for victory. Angelo Matthews, the star, 113, he scored for Sri Lanka. The other match is underway at Old Trafford, Manchester. South Africa won the toss, elected to bat first, Tom, and they're finally showing up at the World Cup because they are racing. They are 94 for 1 after 14 overs. Quinton de Kock, 41 not out. He's been joined at the crease by captain Faf du Plessis on 7. So South Africa off to a flyer, 94 for 1. India and Australia both wanting to win today to finish first, which means they'll take on New Zealand in the semi-final. Whoever finishes second will take on England in their semi-final during the week.
Nothing matches on 1 and 2 down at Wimbledon on the middle Saturday. Ashley Barty has made mincemeat, basically, of GB's Harriet Dart. 6-1, 6-1 in the opening game on centre, and over the wall, Serena Williams did pretty much the same with Julia Georges, the 18th seed, 6-3, 6-4. Williams is looking good. Bit of movement, according to the commentators, back into those legs now, which is daunting for all others. Coming up, Konter against Stevens, Evans against Souza, that's on court one. Nadal against Songa next, and then Federer against Puig on centre court. Meanwhile, Andy Murray and his new men's doubles partner, Herbert, are on the court number two at the moment. They've just won the first set in their second round match. Let's go to the golf now if we can. Mark Archer, leaderboard.
Yeah, it's a moving day Saturday, of course. Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. And I can tell you one man has made a big move. It's Robert Rock, the Englishman. Remember him? Won in Abu Dhabi a few years ago. He shot
a
third round of 60 today. He shot 60. He's flirted with the very tough score of 59. Braden Sick, he's scored 60, and he's moved to 13 under par. He was 3 under par at the start of today's play. He shot 10 under, a round of 10 under today, to move to a 3-shot lead at 13 under par. And a good friend of the show and a good friend of Dubai, Rafa Cabrera-Ballo, has also shot 5 under today to move 3 shots behind Robert Rock. So it's Robert Rock, 13 under par. He's finished his round. Rafa Cabrera-Ballo is on 10 under par. and two shots back, Bernd Weisberger, the Austrian, and Mike Lorenzo Vera from France.
Our colleague Mark Lloyd, who you will who'll be able to hear weekdays in the evenings right here on Dubai I-103.8 from 9 o'clock each and every evening. He has the privilege of being over in Ireland to cover this one for the main sponsors, Dubai Duty Free. So a huge thanks to Con McLaughlin and all the team at DDF, ongoing sponsorship of the Irish Open. Lloydie will bring us up to date with the latest.
Well, once again, Dubai I-103.8 is live here at the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. We've faced all kinds of weather, from beautiful sunshine to very breezy today. It's rain. But joining me once again is Des Smith, our Dubai Duty Free Golf Ambassador. There's a real fairy tale story happening right now before our very eyes. Just tell me all about it.
Right now. Well, it's the Robin Dawson story. Robin was an Irish amateur who was beaten in the Amateur Championship final last year, and he turned pro late last year and went to the school and got a card for the Challenge Tour. So there's where he's playing his golf and showing some progress. But a fascinating story this week was one of the other players who had an invite for the event, but it so happened that when they'd gone through the different categories, he had made it on merit, so the invite was loose and they gave it to Robin Dawson. So he was the last man in. And yesterday evening, he holed a putt here on the 18th green from 15 feet to make the cut. And he's now 6 under today and 7 for the tournament and lying in third spot. So that's some story.
He is flying, I'm sure. You talk about the luck of the Irish getting in, yeah?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call it just pure luck.
No, no.
But the luck was somebody qualifying and he getting that wild card, for want of a better word.
Right, so that's a brilliant story.
It's a great story, and it's happening right now. He's got about 3 holes to play, and he's moved up to third position. Now, conditions are misty and wet today, but there's no wind, so they're good scoring conditions.
Okay. So what else, when we look at that leaderboard, what are some of the other notable names that we need to focus on at this year's Dubai Duty Free Irish Open?
Well, I must say, I like Lee Westwood. He's at -7. I watched him play yesterday. He was playing very solid golf. Didn't struggle for pars, was hitting fairways and greens, finished on -7 and lying in third spot. Eddie Pepperell, who played with them, is a shot better, and they look comfortable. Xander Lombard, I'm not so sure if he'll maintain his position. He's leading right now, and he's just, his form hasn't been that good this year, so it might be one of those just come out of the pack and have a great week. I hope for his sake it happens, but I'd worry that there's so many good players just behind him. Torbjörn Olsen, who played on the Ryder Cup last year for the first time, strong player, has won a Rolex Series event, and they're all lurking in the long grass, and as you know, today is moving day. So
exactly. And anybody that surprised you that didn't make the cuts that you thought might do?
Well, there's lots of players. You always feel sorry for the guys who missed the cut, because it was -1 that made the cut. It was a very tight cut.
Okay.
And some really strong players. Justin Harding from South Africa, Paul Dunne, another Irish player who's had a couple of good seasons, he missed. And you could go down the list and see lots of hot players. Matthew Southgate, I thought he was good because he finished second to Rory McIlroy a few years ago in the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, so he likes playing in this tournament, and he just missed by a shot or two. It's always sad, you know, but that's competitive sport. 156 players started, and there's only 66 players left for the weekend.
Now, for this fairy tale story of a young Irishman who's doing so well, does the being on home turf and having that home crowd behind you, does it help? You must have felt it yourself.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of inspirational stuff there, because I know when he holed yesterday at 18, there was an enormous crowd, and his family were in tears. It's an emotional thing.
Yeah.
It's his first year as a professional golfer. So yeah, I think it'll probably give him, it's obviously working at the moment.
Yeah. What advice would you give him now? I mean, he's got to hold his nerve, hasn't he?
Yeah, just do what you're doing. I mean, he's on a high, so that's beautiful. He's young, he's talented. This could be a very big week for him.
Des Smith, thanks for joining us again.
You're very welcome.
Good on you, Lloydie. Thank you very much indeed for that. In fact, more from Mark Lloyd throughout the course of the weekend. I'll have more updates tomorrow. And get yourself onto the @Dubai I-103.8FM Instagram page for his Insta stories throughout the day. And some very fetching threads as well. So big thanks to Mark Lloyd. The other thing that we need to be discussing is, of course, all things Tour de France. It is, well, it gets underway today.
Chris Froome creating a bit of a surprise here this afternoon, gets the win, Phil.
That is the race to win. I will fight back.
Then you realise all the hard work and stuff we've done to get to that point, and it's pretty overwhelming.
This is the winning ride of the Tour de France.
When I was a kid and I was watching Tour de France on the television, I think my dream of becoming a road cyclist started.
Well, it has started. It has started with quite some style, but it's not started in France.
It hasn't started in France, Tom, no. What they like to do is spread the wealth at the beginning of the tournament. It was in Yorkshire a couple of years ago, and it's in Belgium today, actually to celebrate its 50 years since Eddy Merckx, the iconic legendary cyclist, winner of five tours, won his first ever race. And some of the race today has gone past the location of his very first professional win. Unfortunately, that is about where the excitement has ended. There was a breakaway group right from the start. There were four riders that rattled off from the start line, including two Belgians, obviously looking to capitalise on some home support. Well, they got reeled in with the best part of 60 kilometres still to go. Someone has made a little break, though. For cycling aficionados, you don't take a break with 54 kilometres to go, because that is a long old time to be cycling out on your own when you've got a peloton of the best part of 100 people just sharing the load. So as it is, as we approach about 50 to go, the riders have been out there 3 hours 15 minutes. You've got young Stefan Rosetto in his Tour debut making a break for the line. So if, to be honest with you, it's probably best to tune in about an hour's time, at which point you'll be seeing a sprint finish. The current average pace, though, for that 3 hours and 15 minutes is 43 kilometres an hour. Insane.
We'll keep an eye on the Tour de France, not just today, but throughout the course of its entirety as well. Keep it locked on Dubai I-103.8 for daily updates on that one. We are, of course, multi-sport down here at Dubai I, and we've got boxing aficionados with us here around the table. You love your boxing fortune. Plenty of events that you have taken part in, commentated at, competed at, and, of course, a great watcher of the great game the world over as well. Good news as well, some more great boxing events coming to the UAE.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Tom. I'm absolutely delighted. I invited Michelle Keane down to talk to us today. She's the managing director and brains behind Real Boxing Only, a proper boxer's gym that is in Alcoz. It's a bit gritty, it's a bit grimy, she won't mind me saying. It's one of those sort of places that if you walk into it, you've got to have a little bit of a cock in your walk for that. I think it's one of those places. It's brilliant fun. And she, Michelle, she'll tell us about it in a minute. She's doing some really awesome things to kind of break down those barriers for boxing. She's launched something called Fight Club DXB. Today, this afternoon, was the first event in that. So I'll let her explain a little bit about what that's about.
Thanks, Matt. Yes, so Fight Club is literally a fight club. It's a club that you sign up for, and we schedule fights throughout the year for you. We're looking at two fights every Saturday indefinitely. I am pretty much already scheduled till end of September, and we just start the sign-ups in June. And yes, Matt has already signed up. I've matched him.
What have you done?
Oh, no. Should have just stuck to the lycra and the bicycle, shouldn't I?
I thought you were much more comfortable doing the commentary after, you know, all your exertions in the ring, but you got back in.
We thought you retired. You and Chris Picardi, the silky voices of boxing.
Well, you think with my 100% record, I mean, I didn't want to dwell on it, but an undefeated, it has to be said.
You and Floyd money away with her, isn't
well,
it?
Well, that is about the only similarity, sadly. I'm not parading $2 million on a dining room table this weekend. But yes, you're absolutely right. Sorry, Michelle, to interrupt, but it's one of those type of things. Fight Club, of course. I was very fortunate. I was given an opportunity on a TV show, Fighting Fit, to get my foot in the door of boxing. But it's one of those things, I think, if you're not involved in it from the outside, is probably a bit intimidating for people.
Yes. How it works here is there's big shows, or there's Inner Club, which happen every 3 to 4 months. And what I wanted to do was encourage people that are doing boxing for fitness, as well as boxers, to stay motivated, to keep their weight down, to enjoy boxing and have something to look forward to. It's perfectly safe. It's headgear with 16-ounce gloves, and it's got a referee. We've got CPR-certified people on hand. It's in the gym. Everything is safe, and it allows people the chance to get in the ring as much as possible, get that ring experience, and they shouldn't be intimidated by it. The more often it happens, the more they'll see that actually it's highly, highly motivating, and it's adrenaline rush. I mean, look at, that's why Matt's stepping back in. He got the high just coming and seeing it and hearing about it, and now he wants back in. And people are just not getting the opportunity to fight here. And I have get fitters, including some mothers, that are like, I wouldn't mind having a fight. This is the perfect platform. It's in a gym. It's, they can bring their friends and family. It's no bright lights, you know, big loud music, a lot of people. It's a great stepping stone to get people in the ring as much as possible. And then the shows will still continue. They can still go do the big shows. They can get in front of, you know, ticket selling shows and stuff like that. But there's no movement for low level amateur boxing. It's all just not happening here. And so I really wanted to make it happen.
And tell us a bit about what people will benefit, or what benefits they will get from wanting to take part. Of course, you're relatively new to the boxing scene, but of course, and you won't mind me saying, came to Dubai not necessarily with a boxing background. It wasn't where your journey was originally planned to go, right? But you got into it. What have you seen that's changed in your life that you've learned from the sport, that people, like I say, are intimidated from the outside, but once you're in it, and I can speak for myself, the physical benefits, the mental benefits, they're huge.
100%. I actually come from media, so I took up boxing about 4.5 years, and I did it just to get fit. I wanted to kind of let loose some of the stress of media, and yeah, it stuck. And what it does is it improves your circulation, which helps you lose weight. You burn calories. It's a stress reliever. It also helps you become mentally strong. So you have to push yourself through your training, and you become sharper. You become quicker. Everything about it makes you more confident within, and it makes you calm. It's like yoga, but some people just can't do yoga. Some people need boxing, and that's what it does. It just helps you find that inner confidence, that inner calm, and it changes lives, and that's what we're in the business of.
Do you think it's for everyone? Do you ever get sort of people coming into the gym that think that boxing is for them, and it's not? Is it sort of, I don't want to use the vocation, well, you will use the word vocation, is it or not?
It is for everyone. I do believe it is for everyone. Fighting is not for everyone. That I do believe. It's not for everyone. I think everyone should give it a shot if they want to. But fighting is a bit more aggressive. You have to kind of have that deep side where you dig in and you kind of scrap. And not everyone wants that. But boxing in itself, for fitness, is for everyone. And everyone that comes to my gym are of all levels. I've got beginners. I've got some moms. I've got some kids. I teach kids classes, teens classes, ladies only classes, mixed classes. We have advanced classes. Everyone enjoys every single class they take, because you learn something about yourself. You realize you can do more than you thought you were able to. And that the ones that think boxing isn't for them, I actually encourage them to come. They'll find that side of them is actually in them. They just didn't know that it existed. And it's a journey. Boxing is a journey, and everyone should take that journey.
And how does the journey work? So if someone wants to come and sign up, do you sort of do an assessment and then work out how much training they need before they can actually get in the ring? And obviously there's the physical training, and there's the technical training, and then there's the boxing specific training, the ring training. How do you sort of assess people and then put them in that sort of program to be able to pathway to be able to actually get in the ring and have a fight?
Obviously, it's open to any gym to participate. But when it comes to members, people coming to our actual gym and signing up, I have to make sure that they're doing sparring. So I'm like, right, I've never seen you spar. So you can sign up, but no one's going to get matched with you until you've had a certain amount of sparring. Because sparring is just replicating fighting, ultimately. It's how you learn to respond. It's how your body learns to react to shock, and how you learn to throw back when your body isn't wanting to throw back, when you're tired. And so people come in, they sign up, they start taking all the classes, and then if they look like they're ready, then we do sparring nights 3 times a week in our gym, and they start sparring. They will only get matched with someone with the same experience. So they're going to get in the ring with someone with the exact same experience, especially at that beginner level when they've never had any sparring, anything, you know, when they're brand new. I want them to all have good fights. So when I'm making the matches for Fight Club, I make sure that, one, I try to do the best match possible, and then it's up to the coaches as well. I make sure that the coaches confirm it as well as the boxer, not just the boxer. I want everyone to be in agreement. And the same when it comes to weighing in as well. If there's any discrepancies in weight, the ref, the coaches, everyone has to be in agreement before anyone steps into that ring. It needs to be a fair fight. Everyone needs to enjoy what they're doing in there. If I think that no one's capable, then I won't match them. They need more time.
We're going to find out more about this in just a few moments' time. So if you are interested in finding out more about Real Boxing, getting involved in the Fight Club, Michelle will give us the more details of how you can sign up in just a few moments' time. We will come back and wrap things up.
Unbelievable goal!
This is The Grill, live from Kickers Sports Bar, where the game is always on.
Big thanks to all the team down here at Kickers. It's at Kickers DSC if you want to find out more online. Thanks to them for showing all of the sport that we've been covering throughout the afternoon. Any big news coming from the cricket, Mark Archer?
There's been a second wicket for South Africa. The opener, Quinton de Kock, has been dismissed for just 52. Means that South Africa's still going well. 116 for 2 after 18.4 overs. Faf du Plessis, 16 not out of 20 deliveries. He's been joined at the crease by Van der Dusen, who is only on 2 not out. We can just also tell you that the Indian innings is underway. They're chasing 265 for victory against Sri Lanka, and they are 14 without loss after 2 overs.
Going with Serve Songa against Nadal in one of the big games down at Wimbledon today. Just been watching the Tour de France. They're on tour, stage number one, over in Belgium. It's on down here at Kickers Sports Bar in Dubai Sports City. Just been watching that. I've just been watching one of the, am I right in saying the donkeys? Are they called the donkeys? Who are the team donkeys? The guys that have to go?
Domestiques.
The domestiques, yeah.
The donkeys.
That'll do for me. I've just been watching one of them. I mean, literally, I don't know how many litres of water he had sort of packed into his top.
But yeah, so the way it works within the team, it's very much, although it looks like an individual sport, it's very much a team sport. You have people doing certain things for one or maybe two particular riders, and the domestique is the one who will go back and retrieve everything and almost blow themselves up before they get to the end just to help one guy over. And so you'd always see domestiques will go back to the cars, drop off the back of the peloton, collect all as many water bottles as they possibly can, then belt all the way back up through the peloton to their lead rider. The best bit you can watch, though, and I always enjoy watching, is how long they hold on to the bottle from the guy in the car. So they're getting that little extra help off the car, and they dwell a little bit longer, they fidget a little bit, and they're like, oh, look at that, hang on a second, I'm going 5 kilometres an hour quicker than I was. Always good fun.
In that slipstream. We've just had it confirmed that our man Matt Fortune has signed up for another bout in the ring or two. This is courtesy of Michelle from Real Boxing Only. Michelle's with us down here today as well. So you've got him signed up. You're looking for others at the moment?
Yes, as many can sign up. I have quite a few signed up. As I said, I have matches almost all the way till the end of September. I even have some in October and November just because they were available or they had an experience. But I matched them, gave them time to train for it. So, yes, even if you're not ready, if you're unfit, if you want more training, sign up. There's a section in the sign-up form that allows you to put in dates you're unavailable. Simply put in the dates you're unavailable. So if you're unavailable until October, at least I can start looking for your match, and then you know when you're fighting. The point of Fight Club is to keep people motivated, is to get people in the gym, stay boxing, stay training, lose that weight, stay on weight constantly, versus how it works right now is you lose your weight for your fight, and then like 4 months later, you don't ever fight again. Yeah, so you're back up again. So you lose motivation. This keeps rotating. I've already made second matches already. So people that haven't even fought yet, they're 2 months later, they're fighting again. So they've already been matched for someone else in that weight class. As many as I can get people in there, then I can start making matches for the entire 12 months and keep it rotating, keep it rolling over.
Open to men and women?
Yes, 100%. Yeah. Even children, 10 years old all the way up to 59.
Okay.
I'll evaluate if someone 60 wants to fight.
So they come on in and get the evaluations as well. Matt, why should people get signed up to this?
Let me just say from personal experience, it genuinely was the fight I experienced was, and I'm always very wary that I've been married since, so I have had subsequently had a better day of my life. But that night was absolutely phenomenal. It's so, and looking at today, we went down, there's about 150 people down at Real Boxing Gym. It doesn't happen very often. I mean, for celebrities such as yourself, Tom, people cheer your name wherever you go. But for humble folk like me, it's to be there and to be there center stage, knowing that it's only you in that ring for those 3 2 minutes, you learn so much about yourself. I will say this: at the beginning of my fight, I stood there in front of this crowd. I heard nothing. It was the most calm I'd ever felt. The only other experience I've ever had similar to it was standing at the door before a skydive, because you know it's all on you right then and there. You can't back out because you look awful if you walk out the rope before a punch is thrown. You learn so much. You get fitter than you've ever been. You can really change your whole outlook on certain things because there's no challenge quite like being punched in the head by someone bigger than you to learn how you get out of it. It's awesome, honestly.
Where is Real Boxing Only?
We are in Alcoz, opposite El Cercal Avenue.
Okay.
So go behind Times Square Mall.
And then the Fight Club is taking place each weekend, is it?
It is. The only Saturday we're skipping is the coming one because okay. the referee that we're using, which is a neutral party, is unavailable.
Okay.
Otherwise, the calendar is published on www.fightclubdxb.com. You can also sign up there and you can see what fights are coming up. Their names are there and everything. Then you can come down and see them.
And that might be probably a good way to break the ice. Come on down and have a little look, see if
100%,
it's for you.
100%. Yeah, come down, see what it's like, feel the atmosphere. Talk to even the fighters. You know, today we had first-timers that they started in our gym and they had never boxed before. They lost tons of weight. So one of them, Mustafa, he lost, I think, 20 kg since he joined us. And he had his first fight today. He was one of the first ones to sign up for Fight Club. I was super proud of that. I think it's great to see people like that. His opponent as well was from Class Pass. He used to come in just doing classes at our gym, and he wanted to sign up. And, yeah, they fought today, and it was brilliant.
So website, the best way to do it. Social media as well. Can people stay on top of that?
They can stay on top of it. Yes, our social media, Fight Club DXB, is very, very active.
Cool.
But the only way to join the club is read the rules, sign up at fightclubdxb.com.
Best of luck with it, and keep us posted with this boy's progress with you.
You're next.
These wrists.
I'll strap them up, it's all right.
I got, what was NASA known as? NASA Hussein, he was Papadom Fingers, wasn't
Last
he?
Fingers,
I think I got the same,
fingers.
Papadom Fingers.
Chocolate
yeah.
wrists.
And chocolate wrists as well. Thank you so much indeed for coming on down and telling us all about it.
Thanks for having me.
Best of luck with it. Big thanks to Michelle and all the team at Real Boxing Only. Get yourself online to find out more about that. Best of luck with the Fight Club. Apparently there are plenty of rules for Fight Club. One of the rules you do have to do is tell us all about it.
Yeah,
right?
Come on the radio and tell
us. Talk about it. Well, talk about it loads.
See how I get on.
Best of luck. Matt, bless you for all your time today. Thank you so much indeed for
thanks,
coming
Tom.
On. Thanks also to you, Mark Archer. Enjoy the double header in the World Cup.
Yes, and looking forward to the final, of course, next Sunday.
Best
so,
luck. What's happening if it's England against New Zealand?
Can't be. Can be in the final.
Yeah, what's going to happen? What are we going to do?
It'll make for a really good... We should go, shouldn't
should we?
We should show live from Lourdes.
I'm flying
on the
back.
Saturday.
I'm flying back on the Sunday. I'm back by midday on the Sunday, so we could make the afternoon session.
You know me in World Cup finals. Are we there?
Archie, bless you. Thanks so much indeed for that. Best luck to you throughout the week. Big thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in over the course of the last 3 hours. We're back here at Kickers down in Dubai Sports City next Saturday from 3. Until then, ta-ra.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.